From the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, you're listening to Earth First Radio. Stay tuned for No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music.
You're cutting chainsaws, killing the trees, something everything that lives in peace. Our animal friends are on the run, but there's nowhere to go when the job is done. Takes place. We've got to stop this inhuman race. No compromise. No compromise. No compromise. No compromise. No compromise in defense of Mother Earth. Earth First.
And welcome to Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis. Each week I bring you No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music for activists on the front lines of the environmental movement. In the news you'll hear about corporations, government agencies, and people who are killing the planet, and folks who have the detailed information about saving what's left. They all have names, addresses, phone numbers, fax numbers, email, and web addresses. So please get a pencil or a pen and some recycled paper to write down the information you're about to hear, because this isn't couch potato radio, it's activist radio. I'm asking you to take down the information and act on it. You really can make a difference by writing letters, sending faxes, and making phone calls when you aren't out in the woods up in a tripod or a tree sit or locked down in a dragon at the road blockade. If you have information, news, comments, announcements, or anything else for Earth First Radio, please keep your pencil handy and listen for the contact information later on in the show. As always, we start off with announcements. And this is from BARC up in, I believe they're up in Portland. We've got two exciting events coming up, they say. Also, learn how to track links and watch BARC TV. Well, if you're in Portland, I guess you can do that. This coming Sunday, October 8th at 9:30 in the morning, join BARC for our second Sunday field trip. This month, we're going to be going to a couple of sales on the east side of Mount Hood in Hood River and Barlow districts. These sales, Bernal and Juncrock, are in the transition zone between west and east side ecosystems. They're both in the early planning process, so it's a good time to get involved. Once again, meet at the Daily Grind, southeast Hawthorne at 40th at 9:30 in the morning. I believe that is in Portland, Oregon, and that's this coming Sunday, October 8th. There will be a timber sale review a week from this Saturday, October 14th, from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Snake and Weasel, 1720 Southeast 12th Street in Portland, Oregon. All ground truthers and wannabe ground truthers, please join BARC for a review of upcoming timber sales in the Mount Hood National Forest. So, once again, that's timber sale review, Saturday, October 14th, 1 to 4 p.m. at the Snake and Weasel, 1720 Southeast 12th Street in Portland, Oregon. Learn to track lynx with Cascadia Wild. It's not too late to learn the most useful skill of tracking lynx. Cascadia Wild is conducting training to teach people how to track lynx and other carnivores in order to help out with the lynx tracking project on the Mount Hood National Forest. You must attend one evening class and one field training date. The final group dates are: session number 4 is October 16th for an evening class and October 21st for field training. If you want more details about lynx tracking, call Cascadia Wild. Their number, 503-235-9533. That's 503-235-9533. And unfortunately, the TV schedule for BARC got cut off, so I'm not going to give it to you. Anyway, if you're in Portland, you know the BARC TV schedule. Anyway, act now to protect Condre Mountain Roadless Area, a privately owned forest at risk. The Fruit Growers Supply Company of Hilt, California, plans to clear-cut a 240-acre parcel of ancient forest in the heart of the 20,000-acre Condre Mountain Roadless Area in the year 2001. Activists are working with the U.S. Forest Service to acquire the private inholding, which is surrounded on all sides by the Rogue River National Forest. Your help is needed to save this forest from certain destruction. Public acquisition of the FGS land is extremely important to conservation of the Kalama-Siskiyou region's globally outstanding biological diversity. The company's logging plan would harm the roadless area's wilderness qualities and fragment the Siskiyou Crest Wildlife Migration Corridor between the Cascades and the Coast Range. The FGS Crest Parcel is a pristine, unique, old-growth forest containing critical habitat for northern spotted owl, Siskiyou mountain salamander, Pacific fisher, and locally rare Pacific silver fir. Please call or write to Deb Olkholm, that's O-L-K-H-O-L-M, the Pacific Northwest Regional Purchasing Director, and ask her to recommend the Condrey Mountain Roadless Parcel for acquisition in the fiscal year 2002 budget. Her number, 503-808-2408. Once again, that's 503-808-2408. Ask for Deb. Tell her to buy the place. If you'd like to send her a fax, it's 503-808-2210. And if you'd like to write, here's the address, Deb Olkholm, USDA Forest Service, P.O. Box 3623, Portland, Oregon, 97208. Once again, the address, Deb Olkholm, USDA Forest Service, P.O. Box 3623, Portland, Oregon, 97208. Or you can call her boss. His name is Harv Forsgren, a regional forester. Ask him to advocate the Condrey acquisition proposal to the Forest Service leadership in Washington, D.C., and the California Congressional Delegation. His number, 503-808-2200. And finally, please contact Dennis Kennedy, the National Purchasing Director for the Forest Service. Ask him to recommend the Condrey Mountain Roadless Parcel for acquisition in fiscal year 2002 budget. He makes the final call on Forest Service acquisition priorities. His number, in Washington, D.C., 202-205-1359. Once again, that's Dennis Kennedy, 202-205-1359. And, of course, if you'd like any more information about this Condrey Mountain Roadless area, please contact Jay at the Klamath Siskiyou Wildland Center. Their number, 541-846-9273. That's 541-846-9273. Or, of course, you can visit their website at www.kswild.org. And Arizona fee demo defendants have won in court. A federal judge has thrown out criminal charges against four Tucson activists who were cited for not paying a $5 recreation fee on the Coronado National Forest in Arizona. U.S. District Judge Frank Zapata determined that the government did not have sufficient proof to find the four defendants guilty of a crime that could carry a $5,000 fine and 6 months in jail for each. Well, they got off scot-free. If you want more information, contact Arizona Earth First. Their number, 520-791-2913. That's 520-791-2913 for more information. And the Gap Vigil is continuing in San Francisco. The vigil at Gap headquarters is still continuing. Eight activists in support of workers and the Redwoods slept at the Gap headquarters all night. They awoke to the sounds of Gap employees arriving at headquarters, and the response of the employees has been one of irritation and inconvenience. But there are a few employees here and there who have taken information and been somewhat receptive. Activists and supporters are committed to staying at the Gap headquarters for as long as it takes for the Gap to start meeting the demands of stopping sweatshops and saving the Redwoods. Join them tonight in San Francisco. Go to the Gap headquarters. Not information about where that is in San Francisco, but you can probably find out if you want to go. Demonstrators contend contributions to Davis influence timber policy. A story by John Howard of Associated Press. Environmentalists last Tuesday denounced logging rules they said would harm streams and salmon, despite state regulators' contention that the plan balances environmental protection and timber harvesting. With a large banner saying, "Governor for Sale" as a backdrop, demonstrators also decried Governor Gray Davis's aggressive fundraising, contending the Democratic governor's acceptance of campaign cash has influenced his administration's timber policies. You bet it has. Fake $100 bills with Davis's picture on them were distributed to the public, and demonstrators carried placards saying, "Davis for Sale, Davis's price tag $129,000. This referred to a July 1999 fundraiser at Sierra Pacific Industries headquarters, at which Davis collected $129,000 in political donations from timber interests. You don't think that has any influence? Well, maybe it doesn't, but the proposed rules of the CDF could ease logging restrictions near streams and on hillsides, depending on which of several options the board approves. They approved none of them. The board sets timber policy for private land and must act this week. They acted by not enacting. That's what they did. That's the news from up there. Animal rights activist Josh Herr was temporarily freed on bail last Friday. Josh was arrested September 27th by FBI agents in Seattle on a criminal contempt
of court warrant for failing to appear before a grand jury in Portland looking into a string of eco-terrorist arsons, including the burning of Boise Cascade's timber management office in Monmouth last Christmas. Harper has not been charged in any arsons, but was subpoenaed to testify before the grand jury May 24th, which is looking into suspected eco-terrorist acts by the ELF and the ALF. The crimes include the Boise Cascade fire and a $12 million arson at the Vail, Colorado ski resort in 1998, which the Earth Liberation Front claimed to set as a warning against wilderness destruction. The resort had planned an expansion into Lynx territory. In May, Harper told supporters he would not answer questions. Quote, "My life is my own, my thoughts are my own, and I decide to do will not be dictated to me by judges, attorneys, and their lackeys with guns. If they want me, let them come get me," and they did. "They can drag me into the grand jury room, but they can never make me speak." Strong words from Josh. Action alert on Friday, the 27th of October. Josh Harper is to appear in Portland before a judge at 9 a.m. Let us show him that he is not alone. Come to the courthouse at 1000 Southwest 3rd Avenue in Portland at 8 a.m. to show your support. If you'd like to make a donation to Josh Harper's defense fund, please send a check to earmarked for Josh Harper, and here's the address: Animal Rights America, P.O. Box 469, Caldwell, New Jersey, 07006. Once again, make your check payable to Animal Rights America, fill in the little comment section, Josh Harper Legal Defense Fund, Animal Rights America, P.O. Box 469, Caldwell, New Jersey, 07006. And here's a statement from Josh Harper just a couple of days ago. "Dear supporters, as many of you may have heard, I was arrested on a warrant September 27th by agents from the FBI, the U.S. Marshal's Office, and the local police. The warrant stemmed from my refusal to appear before a grand jury convened in Portland investigating the actions of the Animal and Earth Liberation Fronts. I was taken to a federal detention center and was expected to be transported to Portland to await trial. Then last Friday, a small miracle happened. The prosecutor in Portland and the one in Washington both tried to block me from getting bail. Federal agents were flown in to convince the magistrate not to release me, but due to overwhelming support from the animal, environmental, and anarchist communities, I was released on bail. The courtroom was overflowing with supporters, and they managed to raise more than the amount needed for my bail in less than 20 minutes. I am overwhelmed by the generosity of everyone who helped me, and I cannot begin to express my gratitude. Now that I am on the outside again, I am preparing to fight the charge of criminal contempt. It is not likely that I will win, however, and chances are fair that I will be spending at least a year in federal prison, possibly more. We must put this into perspective. The crime I am accused of basically amounts to missing a court date. So why such a serious penalty? I say it's because they are afraid. All across the world, people are rising up. Small cells of committed activists are fighting for human freedom, ecological sanity, animal liberation, and autonomy. Large protests are finally getting past the tired, ineffective marches and sign holdings that kept the government safe from us all these years, and now are actually becoming a threat again. People are ignoring electoral politics and taking action themselves. We are sick of the lie that tells us 4 minutes of action every 4 years will change the world. We are sick of watching as the last of the wild dies, as the animal nations are massacred, and as our communities become devoid of real life, happiness, freedom, and personality. We don't want to live in a world owned by Starbucks. We don't want to work our existence away making profit for rich bastards we all despise, and we don't want to be beaten down and arrested for finally speaking up. As we rise, they must try to knock us down. The grand jury system is being used all over this country to keep the power in the hands of the elite few. We cannot let this happen without resistance. On Friday, 27th of October, I am to appear in Portland at 9 a.m. before a judge. Let us show him that I am not alone. Come to the courthouse, 1000 Southwest 3rd Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97204, at 8 a.m. to show your support. And again, asking us to make a donation to his defense fund. Of course, the best thing you can do to support me is to keep the resistance going and growing. Once again, that address for the Legal Defense Fund for Josh Harper is Animal Rights America, P.O. Box 469, Caldwell, New Jersey, 07006. And, of course, make the check earmarked for Josh Harper Legal Defense. And a big thank you from Josh. Got news about things that are happening down in Texas. The Little Texas Watershed Project on the Wichita National Forest in Arkansas. Excuse me. I thought it was Texas. No, it's Arkansas. They're going to do a bunch of commercial thinning. 307 acres, 2,000 acres of herbicide applications, 8,000 acres of prescribed burning. That might help, but who knows. 300 acres of seed tree removal. That's clear cuts where they leave one tree per acre, something like that. 19 miles of road repair or reconstruction and 50 acres of single tree selection. Current status of the project is scoping is in progress. Scoping comments must be postmarked by October 30th. Here's the Forest Service contact for this Little Texas Watershed Project on the Wichita National Forest in Arkansas. That's Robert L. Mitchell, District Ranger, P.O. Box 332, Oden, that's O-D-E-N, Arkansas, 71961. Once again, the address, Robert L. Mitchell, District Ranger, P.O. Box 332, Oden, Arkansas, 71961. And the Horn Creek Project on the Sumter National Forest in South Carolina contains the following proposed actions: 212 acres of herbicide application, 1,443 acres of pre-commercial thinning, 4,354 acres of prescribed burning, 212 acres of seed tree, that's where they leave one tree per acre, and 12-plus miles of road repair or reconstruction. Doesn't say when you have to write on this, but... It is a proposed action, so I guess you could have some comments to make to David L. Carter, District Ranger, 810 Buncombe Street, that's B-U-N-C-O-M-B-E, Edgefield, South Carolina, 29824. Once again, that's David L. Carter, District Ranger, 810 Buncombe Street, B-U-N-C-O-M-B-E Street, Edgefield, South Carolina, 29824. And court stops ski expansion into Washington roadless area. On September 26th, federal judge Robert Lasnik ruled the Forest Service cannot simply move the boundary of a roadless area in Washington State's Cascade Mountains to allow expansion of the White Pass ski area. In September 1998, the agency approved a 300-acre expansion of the White Pass Company corporate owners of the ski area into the White Pass roadless area. To avoid prohibitions on road construction by the Northwest Forest Plan, the Forest Service shifted the boundary of the roadless area. The judge caught the Forest Service avoiding its own rules by trying to expand a large ski area development into this sensitive place, commented Dave Wernitz, science director of the Northwest Ecosystem Alliance. The White Pass roadless area is a historical haven for backcountry skiers seeking quiet, pristine, and challenging recreation experiences. If you'd like more information, contact Dave Wernitz, W-E-R-N-T-Z, his number 360-671-9950, that's 360-671-9950, and extension 14, or you can send him email at dwerntz@ecosystem.org, that's dwerntz@ecosystem.org. And in California, Forestry Board rejects logging plan. Logging rules that restrict timber cutting on private land will remain in place for another year after the state board rejected a proposal that eased the rules. The rule specified how many trees must be left standing near streams, how much canopy must be retained overhead for shade, and how close the stream loggers are allowed to cut. The Board of Forestry vote leaves those rules in place for at least one more year over the objections of the logging industry, which contends the requirements are too burdensome. Forestry Board said it would continue to work on permanent rules based on an exhaustive examination of logging's impact on fish and wildlife in fragile watersheds, something loggers, fishing interests, scientists, and environmentalists urge. And from Portland, king pines are on the verge of extinction, but they might be helped by fires. Western white pine forests, once prized for their abundant lumber, have been decimated by maladies. This story, October 2nd, by Don Gallagher of Associated Press. From Boise, he writes, when a 400-year-old tree slowly crashed to the ground in Lata County last year, Idaho lost its largest western white pine, and one of the last of a dying breed was gone. Pinus monticola, the inland northwest's king pine, supplied the nation's construction timber needs for decades. Old-growth groves contained as much as 100,000 board feet per acre, enough to build 10 medium-sized homes. But logging and the onslaught of exotic maladies have left the white pine on the verge of extinction. It clings to just 5% of the habitat it once dominated. Modern forest practices and this year's enormous wildfires, however, may help to save the giant trees. And beach mice have won a critical habitat revision. Three species of beach mice in the southeast may get more critical habitat now than is currently designated, but they could also get less. After a year-long review, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has determined that revision of critical habitat for three endemic beach mouse subspecies in Alabama and Florida. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service will reassess the habitat for the Alabama, Perdido Key, and Chakawatachi beach mice, prepare a proposed rule to designate new critical habitat, and draft an economic analysis of the proposal at some point in the future. Once we determine what critical habitat changes are needed, we will invite the public to comment on them before we reach a final decision, said Sam Hamilton, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Southeast Regional Director. The agency's action came in response to a petition filed last year by the Earth Justice Legal Defense Fund, the Sierra Club, and the Biodiversity Legal Foundation. The petitioner stated the area is now designated as critical habitat is inadequate, and part of it is being destroyed by coastal development. The three beach mice subspecies were listed as endangered in 1985. The existing critical habitat for the three beach mice subspecies covers 2,890 acres dispersed along 34 miles of Gulf of Mexico shoreline in Alabama and Florida, and most of this critical habitat is on federal or state-managed lands. If you want to take a look at it, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife decision is available at www.nara.gov/fedreg. That's www.nara.gov/fedreg, F-E-D-R-E-G. Here's a calendar of events for Diane Patterson, and she's going to be appearing at the Emerald Cafe in Ukiah, California, this coming Saturday at 9 p.m., and next Thursday at the Shenachi Pub in Willits, California, October 13th, the Friday at Tequilma Community School in Tequilma, Oregon, and next Saturday at Provolt Grange in Provolt, Oregon. And I'll read the rest of those as time comes up. But anyway, that's Diane Patterson appearing around places. Good music and environmentally friendly stuff. And here's some news from Canada. For the second time in 3 weeks, the Canadian logging company International Forest Products, also known as Interfor, was counting the cost of vandalism inflicted on its logging operations in the Alajo Valley, British Columbia. Again, hundreds of spikes were found driven into logging road bridges, immobilizing heavy equipment and stopping work. The company puts the cost of the damage at $40,000, their worst day of vandalism in two decades. Last month, British Columbia's Supreme Court imposed unprecedented one-year sentences on two Alajo Valley protesters for criminal contempt of court. And from Boulder, Colorado, two disc jockeys have been fined for allegedly promoting a four-wheel driving mud fest that tore up 25 acres of sensitive wetlands and habitat for a rare toad. It's churned up so much there's no vegetation left, said geologist Bob Ockright, who works with the owner of the land, Tom Hendricks. There are deep ruts. There's oil floating in the water. The truck drivers passed through a national forest on their way to the wetlands, home to boreal toads. The creatures are on Colorado's endangered species list and under study for federal protection. U.S. Forest Service officials said hundreds of people in monster trucks and sport utility vehicles were Caribou Flats west of Boulder on Saturday after hearing disc jockey Stephen Mead and Darren McKee talking on the air about the thrill of mud driving. The DJs and KBPI-FM station manager Don Howe denied they sanctioned or promoted the event, but the Forest Service last Wednesday cited Mead and McKee for failing to obtain a permit for a gathering of more than 75 people. It fined each of them $50. Now, Earth Firsters know all about that 75-people limit. Anyway, the DJs have apologized, saying they, quote, wanted to make this right. And from Australia, we read that Australia has said it has put on a temporary ban on shark finning in its tuna fisheries, saying the practice of cutting off shark fins, which are considered an Asian delicacy, may threaten some shark species. Finning, the practice of slicing the fins off live sharks at sea and dumping the animals back in the water to die, has raised the ire of conservationists who see it as cruel and wasteful. The Australian ban would require tuna fishermen who catch sharks as a byproduct of longline tuna fishing to land whole sharks at a port before the fins can be removed. The ban is intended to cut down the number of sharks killed under existing bycatch limits imposed on longline fisheries. Agriculture and Fisheries Minister Warren Truss said the ban would not affect operators for whom sharks were the target species because fins were part of their product and carcasses were always landed. Quote, the ban is designed to ensure better compliance with existing bycatch limits and deter the practice of shark finning by encouraging sharks to be released alive while at sea, Truss said in a statement. Shark fins are a big business in Asia, where the glutinous shark fin soup is considered a delicacy in Chinese cuisine. The fins fetch up to $2,350 per kilogram in Singapore. That's about $1,000 a pound. In Hong Kong, the world's largest importer of shark fins, the conservation group WildAid estimates some 100 million sharks, skates, and rays are killed every year, threatening several species. Truss said the ban, which follows growing political pressure in Australia and overseas, was a temporary measure to allow the government to study shark sustainability on a fishery-by-fishery basis. And we're going to take a little break here, and I believe we're going to listen to some poetry. This is called Hey Duke Lives, and artist is Gnome, a poet out of Austin, Texas.
Can I do one more?
Yeah!
Okay. Okay. This one, is Wade here?
Yeah.
Wade? Yeah, as the executive director of the Sons of Haiti.
It's better than
naked. It goes, would they renounce the mainstream as half-hearted fakers demanding no compromise in defense of roadless areas over 50,000 acres and spoke for the canyons, for the buzzards and bats and dubbed themselves white men in cowboy hats? Well, the movement kept growing over the years. Earth First became more than them and their peers. Something went wrong in the great master plan, and they all ducked for cover when the shit hit the fan. Was there a fight for a movement or a fight for a name? A thousand different fingers all pointed the blame. To the hippies or leftists, the FBI or PC, to suburban redneck biologists, or a wife named Nancy. But now they've decided to face what they feared and come to embrace what they once pioneered. They'll be back to join us, asking for a new start with vast names like Howie and Bart. But through the years, they've grown wiser. Their beards have grown bigger. Even a dope-smoking Republican who was once known as Digger, who's cried in his office since the late 80s, but now asks for forgiveness after being banished to Hades. But he's made his amends and returned what he stole and then gives all his blessings to a movement made whole. With our present, our future, and our past, then only then can we cuddle up closely, see Glen Canyon Dam go up with a blast. They've been hibernating, now they're awake. Have a cigar and a chicken fried steak and give praise to the canyons, to the buzzards and bats, and to the return of the white men in cowboy hats.
Yeah.
And Earth First Radio will be right back.